Here are a few quick tips from Chad, children and adults with ADHD. Trouble sleeping? Adults can benefit from establishing a bedtime routine. Before going to bed, make a to-do list of things for the next day so that you don't forget the things you need to do the next day. And practice relaxation techniques before bed. Quick tips are brought to you by Chad, children and adults with ADHD. Get more tips on chad.org. Visit, join, get involved.
Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, your ADHD information station where we help those with ADHD pay attention to attention, with your host, ADHD and attention coach, Jeff Topper.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I am your guest host, ADHD coach Caroline McGuire, and we have a great show for you tonight. Our title is Helping ADHD Kids Put Their Future Glasses On and Get Things Done, which we would all love. In our virtual studio is our guest, Sarah Ward. Tonight is Wednesday, June 22nd, 2016 at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And before we get into the meat of the show, a few announcements. Dr. Barkley has asked me to remind you to check out ADHDfund.com, a crowdsourcing website to raise money for small-scale research. And I think that's the end of our announcements. So let's get to the meat of the show. With us in our virtual studio is Sarah Ward. Now, Sarah Ward is very well known to me. We have known each other for many years. She has offices just down the street from me. And Sarah is well known to many of us who attended the CHAD conference last year because she was a keynote speaker. She has over 15 years experience, and she is a speech and language pathologist. She's a past president of the Massachusetts Brain Injury Association. She holds a faculty appointment at the Massachusetts General Hospital Institute of Health Professionals, where she provides instructions to a graduate-level students in assessment techniques, developed of therapeutic objectives and intervention strategies for individuals with traumatic brain injuries. She's also a frequent presenter in public and private schools across the U.S. She's received several awards for distinguished service and expertise. And Sarah gives us a really unique perspective on helping kids learn executive function and bringing it into a very real setting. So, Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
So, Sarah, you gave a great, great speech at CHAD last year and talked about something that is near and dear to my heart, which is the fact that some kids with executive function challenges, ADHD, don't have a sense of time, or at least we feel sometimes like they don't have a sense of time, and they don't have a lot of future thinking. And you talked about a great image that we could all picture of kids on a rug listening to a teacher, and you talked really about some of the kids who just aren't hearing the teacher's instructions and aren't tuned in, and that whole problem begins this sense of time. Can you comment on that?
Sure, absolutely. So when we look at individuals who have strong executive function skills, there tends to be one primary theme, and the theme is that they have this incredible ability to run what we call a mental narrative or a mental model of the future. And so if you imagine that you and I are sitting at breakfast and we're eating our breakfast, we start to run a movie, if you will, through our mind of what our day will look like. And so we might think, well, I have a meeting at 11 o'clock, I have a lunch break around noon, and then I have another meeting at 1. My meeting at 1 is pretty fancy. I think I'm going to need to wear a nice outfit. I'll either wear my black dress or my blue dress, and I need a document that's on my home desk for that. And we're running that movie in our mind where we see ourselves actually walking through the house so that the minute we put our dish in the sink and walk up to the closet, we've already predetermined what we're going to wear. And as we're getting dressed, we walk in our mind downstairs to get our, you know, document on the desk so that the minute we get down to our office, we've grabbed that document. And it's interesting because with that in mind, 90% of the time, task planning happens in a different space than where we execute the plan. So we're always sort of what we call a beat ahead, and we're pre-imagining. So the example you referenced in the classroom is, I hear many teachers, and especially this time of year, will say, oh, that little guy, it's as if he still doesn't even know the routine. Here it is, April, May, and every day he walks in and he doesn't seem to know the routine. He doesn't seem to follow the directions. If you have a strong executive function skill, even though it's, say, Monday morning and you're sitting on the rug, and if you know the routine, then you're already imagining, yeah, as soon as this morning circle time is over, we're going to be asked to write in our journal. I can see what I'm going to write in my journal. I see how much time I have. And that student is already pre-imagining how they're going to tackle that assignment so that the minute the teacher dismisses them, they go right to the desk, take out their journal, and begin writing. Individuals who don't have this pre-imagination, we say, are a beat or sometimes 22 beats behind. So mom says, go upstairs and get ready. Go upstairs and get ready. We're going to soccer. You've got to get your soccer outfit. And the child says, yep, okay. Mom says, go upstairs. You need to get upstairs. And finally the child walks upstairs. If they've not pre-imagined, they walk in the room, and there's no plan in their mind of how they're going to get ready for soccer, and there is the, quote, shiny object, and all of a sudden they're off task, and then they require the prompt to get started. So many, many of our interventions are based upon this idea of really teaching individuals how to create that mental future narrative.
That's great. So, Sarah, I love the image because we hear that from teachers all the time, that the child is not – And often it's depicted as intentional, like the child is willfully not trying to get ready or follow directions. And you're reframing that with what you and I both know, which is that the child doesn't even know they're supposed to be thinking about the next step. And one thing you mentioned about the soccer outfit I want to touch on, because a lot of times what I hear from parents is that they think it's all about shifting and the ability to be flexible and move from task to task. But you're really telling us that it's a lot of it is about this image in the mind and this predetermination.
Absolutely. And I think several things that are critical related to that. So the first is that you do have to imagine into the future and to sort of see that plan. I'll give you a quick school example. If the teacher says, we're going to be doing math, and tonight you need your math homework, we're going to be reviewing that, we're going to be working in our math journals, and you're going to need your math manipulatives. A student, again, who has that skill, it's not just that they have to be able to shift from the current task to the math task. It's that they need to hear that direction and translate it into a mental sequence of movement of steps. I see myself going to the cubby. I'm going to the back of the room to get the journal. Then I'll go to the math zone, and I'll get my fraction circles, and I'll sit back down. If you haven't imagined that movement and that sequence through time, then the teacher finally says, okay, it's time. We're shifting to math. And that child may not start, so the teacher says, go get your homework. And that child may not even navigate the space efficiently. They may kind of take the long way around. They go and get the math homework, and then they sit back down. And the teacher says, well, where's your journal? And they go, oh, right. And then they go to get the journal, and they may socialize along the way. And because they haven't pre-planned that sequence of steps, now their pacing is off and their timing is off, and the teacher may feel that pressure. The teacher may even grab the fraction manipulatives for that student and put them on the desk for that student. And so they're really a beat behind. And the second important part about pre-imagining that sequence that relates to it being more than just a shift skill is that how far into the future across space and time you can see is developmental. And as children get older, we require them to pre-imagine that sequence of plans across greater distances and greater spans of time. So a good example is that child that I described, which might be more of an elementary example, they're simply in the classroom and need to plan the sequence events, and they can see within the classroom where they're going. If we imagine a student in middle school who's at their locker, they're at their locker, but now they're planning what they need to do to get to class on time. But the class isn't right in front of them, so they have to hold the image of the classroom in mind. So they need to see themselves going down the hall, up the stairs, down another hallway, into the classroom, at the desk, taking out the homework, remembering to turn in the homework, and taking out the lab notebook. So it's a greater distance. And then as you even get older in high school and even late middle school, you may be at your locker at 10 a.m., but you also have to imagine, well, what do I look like 5 hours from now when it's 4 p.m. and I'm doing my homework at home, and now home is 4 miles from where I am at my locker. And that distance between where you are and the planning that you're doing and when you will actually execute the plan is called the spatial temporal window. So a large portion, again, of our interventions are increasing the temporal window of how far into the future students can imagine.
That's great, Sarah. And I think this might help parents who are trying to wonder why the kid goes upstairs and never comes back with the soccer uniform, why, you know, they can't go to their locker and ever bring things home. Might help them to understand that this is a piece that I think often people don't get, which is this pre-imagining and this mind-miming. We have to go to a break, but when we come back, I would love to talk about what we can do to help build this future thinking.
Terrific.
And before we go to a break, Sarah Ward has a great website, EF as an executive function, practice.com. And she has a new tool. She has an app for 360 thinking, as well as a new tool that's a time banner. And she's going to touch on this a little bit when we come back. But check out her website. She has a lot of great things. And we will be right back from the break.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
The average annual cost of attending college starts around $25,000. Students who have ADHD are at high risk of dropping out because they haven't learned the critical skills they need to succeed in school. Protect your investment with an EDGE Foundation coach, specifically trained to help students with ADHD and executive function challenge make the transition from high school to college. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more or call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE to get your free college success guide.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You deserve the best-trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
If you think you understand attention so well, then why are you struggling so much with it? Attention is as simple as it is complex to understand. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. It's grossly misunderstood. Consider this. Focus on the wrong thing, get the wrong solution. In our new ebook, we'll share 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download our ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start understanding and managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
All right, welcome back, everyone. And in our virtual studio today, we have Sarah Ward, who is an expert in executive function. And she's talking about something that always baffles parents, which is this idea that the child isn't really ever sure about what to go get upstairs to get in their soccer uniform, that they're just struggling with this sense of time. And she talked before the break about the fact that a lot of this is linked to development and maturity in terms of the ability to walk through in your mind and mind things. Sarah, this is so wonderful and important, but what is it that parents can do in terms of looking at things and helping the child mind? Because you're saying they get to the top of the stairs and they don't know why, they haven't pre-imagined the steps. And I think what ends up happening is parents end up, nagging a lot, but I'm sure they'd love to do something else.
Absolutely. Nagging's so fun. So you mentioned that phrase mind mime, and that's something that we talk a lot about. This future skill has a very specific name. It's called mimetic ideational information processing, which is a mouthful, and that's why we call it the mind mime. You are essentially miming the idea or doing a mental walk in your head. And that mental walk has four components, which I think are important to state for a moment so that we understand what the strategies are. To make it easy for parents and clinicians, we made an acronym of those four pieces to match the word mime. So when you mime the future, the first thing you have to do is make an image in your mind. You really need to actually see what that future is going to look like. And the I stands for what will I look like. So you must actually see in your mind by yourself in that future image. And then the M stands for movement. You need to pre-imagine your future movement. And the E stands for emotion. What will your future emotion be? And so, for example, if mom says to a student, okay, we do have to get to soccer practice. We've got to leave here at 3:30 so that we're not late. It's 3:20 now. You need to go upstairs and get ready. What's interesting is the student, even though they're downstairs, if they're doing this efficiently, would make an image of their bedroom in their mind. Then they imagine, what do I look like? And they pre-imagine seeing themselves in their bedroom. And then their movement. I'm going to go from the dresser, the third drawer down, and take out my uniform, over to my closet and grab my cleats because I know we're playing on grass. I'm going to go over to my desk area where I happen to know my shin guards are. And then I'm going to go to the bathroom and come downstairs. They're pre-imagining that movement, and they need to pre-experience the emotion. Gee, if I'm slow with that or I take too long, then we could get in the car late, and I don't want to be late to practice because the coach really frowns on that, and it makes me feel bad. If you don't do that, then there's no reason to it makes sense why, if you aren't doing this skill and you're not sensing the passage of time and you're not sensing that emotion, that all of a sudden it's 3:30 and mom's anxious going, we're late, come on, we got to go. And mom's the one feeling the emotion of it. And that movement piece where you pre-imagine your movement is, in fact, what gives us a sense of the passage of time. Because in our mind's eye, we imagine going from point A to point B to point C, and we can feel how long it takes to get from each of those points. So some really practical strategies that parents can do. One, to make an image, we actually recommend that parents have a true photograph of a student that matches what their activity they're going to. So I might have a photo on my phone of what my son looks like when he's in his soccer uniform and totally ready to go. And so when we're downstairs, not when the child is upstairs, I might pull out that phone and say, you know, when you're ready for soccer, this is what ready looks like. And it's critical at this point to state that it really does need to be a photograph. It should not be a clip art of a little kid in a soccer uniform. It should not be a clip art of a soccer ball and cleats and shin guards, because clip art just tackles what we call semantic memory or factual memory. A photograph accesses something called episodic memory, and episodic memory is an individual's ability to memorize or to see and experience themselves in a specific space and time. So that child can look at that photograph and go, oh, right, that's what I need to look like when I'm ready to go out the door. And then we might stop the student at the bottom of the stairs and say, before you head upstairs, point out your plan. And we actually want the student to point and point even up to their bedroom and say, I'm going to go in my bedroom, keep pointing and gesturing, over to my dresser, grab my uniform, over to my closet and get my cleats, and then point as if they were pointing to their desk, I see my shin guards. And that gesture is important because that movement and gesture is what captures that mind-mime movement piece where they really can pre-experience sort of seeing where they're going to go. Another critical strategy is to use a phrase. When your child is getting ready, let's say they're getting ready to do homework, they're getting ready to go into school and turn homework in. Instead of saying, forget to turn your homework in, or go upstairs and get ready, we want to say, tell me your plan for getting your homework in, or tell me your plan for being ready for your piano lesson. And the importance of saying, tell me your plan, is that it helps students to create that mental narrative, that story of being able to say, well, I need to do this, and then I need to do that, emphasizing again that individuals with strong executive function skills are constantly telling themselves a future narrative. Adults will say, oh, I have a meeting with my boss. I'm going to wear something nice. When I go in and talk with him today, I'm going to say this. He might say that back, and then I'll respond this way. But if he says that, I think I'll respond this way. We're telling a future story. By starting to ask our students, tell me your plan, that can be really helpful. So I'm talking a bit, but those are two things, and then I can talk about the timepiece as well. Show them a picture of what ready looks like, even having a bag, take everything out of the student's backpack, lay it on the floor, take a photograph of it, turn it into a luggage tag. With our middle and high school students, we keep that image on an album in their phone that's called Get Ready, so the student can pull up on their phone and really see, ah, that's what my bag looks like when it's packed and I'm ready to go. I can imagine my plan of what I need to do to match that image.
That's great. And I was just about to ask you, what do you do for high school students? Because I know my little one, I can take photographs and post them up and she's not going to be upset. But when I work with older students, they are, you know, constantly nervous about being different. And that's a great idea to put it on the phone. And what I also hear you saying is an interesting thing, which is that this future narrative is incredibly important. What are your thoughts about rehearsal? I mean, it sounds like you're almost promoting this idea of rehearsal, which is something, as you know, we do a lot when we build social skills and when we try to help kids come toward other behaviors. It sounds like you're advocating a rehearsal and a demonstration.
In essence, yes, and it's particularly helpful for students who don't like novelty or who become anxious with unexpected changes or become anxious if they're being asked to do something that they've never done before. When we do a rehearsal, though, we're very specific in the way in which we train it, students, the MIME acronym. So we might start with, let's make an image. And we might go on to the internet to find a similar image. We might just sketch a picture of what that would look like. We call that the future sketch. And then we talk about, let's imagine yourself. What would I look like? So imagining your clothing, perhaps, imagining what you might look like and the things you might be saying. Then we pre-imagine the movement. All right, tell me how you see yourself moving from point A to point B through space and through time to match that picture. And then imagine if it goes your way and it feels great, what does that feel like? What's the positive emotion or what's the emotional experience you want it to be like? And then what actions do we need to take to kind of create that future emotion? And the reason why this is particularly helpful with novelty is that, for example, if you and I were in Chicago and you said, hey, let's go to the Chicago Museum of Fine Arts. Well, I've never been to the Chicago Museum of Fine Arts, and so I would now have a problem because I've told you that imagining the future is an important skill for executive function, but how could I possibly imagine it? I've never been there. I often hear teachers say, oh, gosh, we're really, this student is very anxious about next year because it's a new school, or he's going on to eighth grade. He's anxious about his classes. Well, I might say, I understand that because you've never been in an eighth grade English class. You've never been in a sophomore level history class. However, what we teach students is rely on your past episodic experiences. Well, I have been to the Boston Science Museum, and I can imagine that the Chicago Museum of Fine Arts would be the same but different. So same, you'll probably walk in, there will be an area to purchase tickets. There will be exhibits. Exhibits will have plaques. There's likely to be a museum store and a museum cafe. And so I use the features of a past experience to map on how I could pre-imagine and have a pretty good idea of what that future experience would look like. And that concept of same but different is a critical skill for rehearsal and planning for students with executive function, and it's very calming for anxiety. So I might say to a student, well, we have been in classes before, so let's think about what we know about classes. There's seating, there's usually a whiteboard front area, there's a teacher, and there's usually posters and decorations on the wall. So if we were going to a geography class, we could pre-imagine how the posters on the wall might be the same but different from my current class this year. If I know it's a teacher, I might can guess how this teacher might be the same but different from my current teacher. And we find that's a great way to support students in being able to anticipate and rehearse and be more effective in the future.
That's great, Sarah. So we're going to have to run to a break, but Sarah Ward is here. She's talking about this idea of looking at what's the same but different and creating that mind mime as we try to build future thinking. I'm going to run to a break, but before I go, Sarah has a great website. It's executive. It's efpractice.com, which stands for executive function, the E and the F, and she has some great tools, including something I'm very fond of, which is a tool that helps you work with kids on timing and the sweep of time and looking at time, and it's an app. As well as she has a new time banner that shows how to use the passage of time. And I think we'll definitely be talking about that when we come back. All right, we're going to run to a break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
You can't go off to college with them, but we can. Visit edgefoundation.org to learn more how an EDGE coach can help your student reach their full potential. You can also call 206-632-9497 and use promo code EDGE and get a free college success guide.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Focus on the wrong thing? Get the wrong solution. Misunderstand attention and you'll struggle with it. Get 5 key tips and insights on managing ADHD learned from conducting more than 300 interviews with attention experts. Download the ebook today at attentiontalknetwork.com and start managing your attention today.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I am here in the virtual studio with Sarah Ward, who is an expert in executive function, and she is one of my favorite people because she has a lot of very concrete, usable strategies. So she doesn't just tell us what's going on. She tells us how to build those skills. And before the break, we were talking about something that goes on for many of the students we work with and many of your children, I'm sure, which is this idea that they get nervous and they can't really pre-imagine what things are going to be like next year or if they're going on a field trip. Or if they're doing something new. And she was talking about this idea of things that are the same but different, and how to walk through that skill with a child or a teenager in order to really help them build a sense of time and build a sense of future thinking. Sarah, you talk a lot about this idea of the sweep of time. How does that relate to this same but different?
So I think the key piece about the sweep of time is that if we think of seeing the future and understanding how experiences in the future, especially if they're novel, might be the same but different, we're asking individuals to image in their mind. And so when we think of time, time is actually a unit, and time needs to be an image of the volume of time available to you. And we need to be able to coach students in being able to see time, whether that's hourly time, daily time, weekly, and then into monthly time. And we have to find a way to make that visible to students. Unfortunately or not, we definitely live in a digital world, and I have many, many students who, I think I remember being a kid, we worked on analog clocks in first and second grade for a solid year. Many of the curriculums have really reduced that. There's not much spent time on analog clocks. And having an analog clock is crucial for having students develop a sense of hourly time. And we really need students to be able to see the volume of time available. If mom says to a student at home, it's 11:45, we're going to be leaving the house in 10 minutes, a student who lives in the digital world goes, great, it's 11:45 plus 10, we're leaving at 11:55. That doesn't necessarily mean that they've pictured directly on a clock that sweep or that pie of time in that upper left-hand corner of the clock, if you will. And so to make time visible and to help students to be able to create what we call time markers, my co-director here, Kristen Jacobson, who unfortunately could not be with us today, just a brilliant mind in executive function, we really spent work and came up with a method of showing students how to have a metacognitive approach to time. We'll utilize an analog clock, preferably one with a glass face, and we take a dry erase marker and we actually draw right on the face of the clock. We call it a working clock to contrast that with a wall clock. A wall clock, it's just an arbitrary name, but a wall clock is the clock that hangs on the wall and tells you the time of day. But a working clock moves with the student where they're doing their work, whether that's at the kitchen table, at their desk, in the living room. It could even be in the bathroom as they're getting ready in the morning. So if I have a student who is at their desk doing homework from 3:30 to 4 o'clock, we take a dry erase marker, we draw down the minute hand, we shade in the direction of the sweep of time to the 4 o'clock, and we shade in that whole half hour of time so that the student can see the volume of time available. The importance of drawing on the clock is that now that shade of time matches the movement of time. So if I have a student who is, it's 4:10 and they're leaving for a drama lesson at 4:30, I would shade directly on the clock from 4:10 to 4:30 so that they can see that 20 minutes as it matches the actual time of day. The second positive aspect of doing that is that as the minute hand moves through the area that you have shaded on the clock, the student can now see how much time is available that's left, but also they have the ability to now look back and see, gosh, I've already spent 10 minutes, that's when I started. And being able to look back allows them to see, how did I do during that time that I had blocked off? Was I on task? Was I productive? Or did I have any time robbers? And we love to use that phrase, time robbers. We find students of all ages, adults alike, understand that time robbers steal your time. If a student's doing homework from 3:30 to 4 o'clock, we also want a student to have what we call time markers. Again, individuals with really good executive function skills see themselves in the future, and they create a stop spot or a marker in the future. If I hop in the shower, I don't just hop in the shower. I get in the shower and say, I see that I have to be out of the shower by 7:10 this morning. As soon as I get out of the shower, I know I need to be dressed and ready to go downstairs by 7:30. I'm picturing a future mark in time. So a second key thing that my co-director Kristen developed, which is just fantastic, is something that we call trackness. They're just magnets that we put on the face of a clock. And what we do is we have a student create a time marker. So if I'm working from 3:30 to 4 o'clock, I might put a start magnet at 3:30, an end magnet at 4 o'clock, and a midpoint check-in marker at 3:45. That way, as the minute hand is moving, I can, as a student, see a future mark in time, and I can imagine my future goal of where I'd like to be. If I'm reading history and I'm a high school student and I'm reading 10 pages in my textbook, if I'm reading from 3:30 to 4 o'clock, my time marker would be at my midpoint to hopefully be about 5 pages in. If I'm not, then I have to say, well, what are my time robbers? Have I been on Instagram? Have I been hopping up and down to get a snack? Have I been playing with the dog? What's stealing my time?
Do you, Sarah, advocate then that that the student think about these time robbers and then have a certain amount of time that goes by before they say, okay, I am not focused today. My brain is not aroused and this is not going correctly? Because, you know, it seems to me that there's a lot of times when children with weak executive function, you know, the whole day passes and they accomplish nothing. I call it being tethered to the desk where, you know, they've been there all day, but nothing has really happened. Do you advocate them? Is that part of that check-in or that midpoint?
Yes. However, I would qualify and add a couple pieces to that. One of the things that I see is that if a student is doing homework for a half hour, a lot of times I talk with parents and they say, well, we set a timer for 30 minutes. We don't recommend that. We actually recommend that if you shade on the clock for a half hour and you're going to add a timer to that to alert the student auditorily to a passage of a unit in time, that in fact you rather would set the timer for 15 minutes. The student has the opportunity to self-check in and self-reflect and say, oh, how am I doing? And if I'm not on track, that they can come up with a plan to get back on track so that they aren't losing the entire half hour to distraction and to being kind of lost in thought. The second piece that I would qualify that is it comes back to this idea of being a mind mime and having a clear future goal of what it is that you want to accomplish for that window of time that you've established for yourself. So if a student just says, I'm sitting down to do homework from 3:30 to 4 o'clock, I wouldn't actually advocate for that. We would instead really support, imagine it's 4 o'clock and you're done with homework. What does done actually look like? And we teach the process to students and in classrooms and professionals to what we call plan backwards and then execute forwards. And we always start with the done. What does done look like? I've written 10 sentences for 10 spelling words. If I'm a high school student, I've written an open response paragraph to a book that I've read and that's a literary analysis. Middle school student, at the end of my half hour, I have studied for Spanish and I've memorized 20 new vocabulary words. The value of knowing what done looks like then allows you to have a good time marker and to set a pace of, well, then where should I be at my midpoint? I should have at least 5 of my spelling sentences written. I should have at least 10 of those vocabulary words memorized so that you really have a reference point at your midpoint. If your midpoint, you only have 2 sentences, then you can self-reflect. You can review and say, well, why is that? Is it because I am just distracted? Is it because it's hard? Is it because I need help? Is it because I actually don't have my list of spelling words? I just hadn't even gathered those items. So it really makes and puts the sort of self-reflective piece back into it. But I would love to add another piece because you mentioned our time banner and you talked about where kids can lose an entire day to the passage of time.
Yeah.
So and I talked about the fact that there's hourly time, but we also need kids to see daily time. And it's so shocking to me. I just see almost every student that walks through the door, the minute you pull out a schedule, and the schedule is not a homework agenda book. An agenda book is where you actually write down what you're going to do for homework. A schedule is something that allows you to see the units of time over the course of a day. There are more students who say, I don't like schedules. I don't want to be scheduled. They never work out like that. I don't want to feel locked into time. It's really interesting. It makes kids anxious. They don't like it. And one of the things about a paper schedule is that if there's a paper schedule and kids are writing on it, putting words on paper, and they might say, I have a class at 10, I have a tutor at 4, I have a soccer practice at 6, and that's it. But they're actually, if they just write that word down, they may not see the volume of time. They may not see what we call the goes with and the maybes. Well, what goes with soccer practice is driving to and from soccer practice. What goes with your tutor is driving there, and maybe that session might go a little late because your mom talks with the tutor after the session. And adults call that the fudge factor. We kind of, you know, build in a fudge factor into our time. If I'm driving into Boston and it's 5 o'clock p.m., what goes with that is rush hour traffic. I might build in a fudge factor of 30 minutes. I think that language fudge factor is too abstract for some students. So we found even just putting it on paper, kids still didn't see and feel that passage of time. They didn't have the movement that was associated with it. So what we created was a very long 14-foot, I call it a banner. It looks a lot like a 14-foot poster, and it's 1 foot wide. And you roll it out on the ground, and we lay it on the ground, and we call it Walk Through Time. And it is literally a schedule that runs from 7 in the morning to 11 p.m. at night with 15-minute increments. So it just looks like a schedule that you would see on a piece of paper, except it's very, very long. And it has colors to represent the morning hours, the noon, the mid-evening, afternoon, and then evening and late evening. And what we do is we actually have students stand right on top of it and walk through their day so that they can see what the day looks like, they can feel the amount of time needed to, say, drive somewhere, and they see how time fills up. And it is fascinating to watch students walk through time. So, for example, I had a little boy in yesterday in my office. It's summertime. His mom had a fabulous paper schedule that showed him how he could plan units of time. So she would say, okay, let's look at your plan between 8 and 10. You could do some of your math summer work. Then you have an open chunk of time from 10 to 12. And he just said, no, 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 I don't need that. I'm going to do my math whenever I want to do it. And so she kept trying to impart the importance of him of having a plan so that if he did his math in the morning, he would have free time in the evening. And he locked in and refused to use it. So we went out, and I rolled out this walk-through time banner, and I first demonstrated to him what my schedule looked like. I walked through time and showed how I saw future marks in time that I had, for example, a downtime zone at home in the evening after I had made dinner and helped my kids with homework, how then I had a time in the evening where I needed to get my materials ready for the next day. His mom walked through time to demonstrate, and I said, okay, it's your turn. So he said, well, I have this appointment from 10 to 11, and then he said, oh, it takes us a half hour to drive home. And then he said, I'm home from 10:30, and he walked on it, 11:30, 12:30, 1:30, 2:30, 3:30, 4:30. And then I have baseball, oh, but I have to get ready for baseball actually at 4 o'clock because it's a long drive. And then I have baseball from 5 to maybe 7, but the game could go late. It could be 7:30. Oh, and then afterwards, I'm going to do math. Mom said, you're going to do math after baseball. He goes, oh, well, actually, maybe we might go swimming at one of my friend's house. So I don't want to do that. I want to go swimming. I don't want to do math. And so he ran all the way back to the top, and he said, oh, so I'm going to leave here, and then I'm going to do math because then that would give me 1, 2, 3, 4 hours to do what I want to do.
And it completely reshaped the way that he saw his day. And I use this time banner with young children. I use it with college students. I have adults on my caseload. And it is remarkable. Every time they walk through, they have this aha moment of, oh, that's why I need to do that. I have a college student who is home for the summer. He has a job where he's working as kind of a security guard at a stadium. And he said, well, I'm going to leave your office and I'm going to go home and I'm going to go to work. And then he goes, oh, actually, I promised my dad I have to mow the lawn, so I don't have time to chill out when I get home. Okay, so I'm going to leave your office, I'll get home, then I'm going to have to mow the lawn, and then I'll go to, oh, I have to shower, so I guess I need that 15 minutes to shower. Wait, I have to do that there because it's going to take me 45 minutes to drive to my job. And there's something about walking through time and feeling how it's going to fill up that suddenly it clicks for patients of that's what time looks like and that's what time feels like, and they don't have the same experience just writing it on paper.
What I love about that, Sarah, and then I'm sorry we have to go, but we'll definitely have you back, is that, you know, many, many times you're a mother, I'm a mother, but we see clients. There's a lot of argument about these kinds of things. And what I love about that is that the mother of the child who didn't want to do the math, she didn't have to really argue. She didn't have to spend, you know, emotionally draining hours. The child, by walking through and feeling the time, he actually self-corrected and began to see how it would, every event affect each other. And then it's less of a dramatic argument where, you know, you're trying to insert your point of view. So I love that. And I think we have to go, but I think that this is definitely something that we love aha moments. That's actually one of our things here at Attention Talk Radio. And I think that tool helps promote those aha moments, it sounds like.
Because the time banner is also dry erase. And I had another little guy who goes, oh, can I write on this? And all of a sudden he sort of jumped down and wrote on a few key things and then walked through time to match those. So it does really create this fun aha moment for kids. I appreciate that so much. You're sharing that. Thank you.
No problem. Well, Sarah, we have to end, but I am so thrilled to have had you on. And I really think that people will walk away with this idea that, when we want to promote the future thinking, this mind miming and this pre-imagining is absolutely crucial. And you've given them tools to do it, which I love. And we'll hope to see you again soon. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for the invitation. Have a great summer.
You too.